No matter what your position on the Iraq war, it's pretty clear that all the choices for what should happen now have serious downsides. Pull out troops and people left behind die. Keep troops there and more deaths. Thorny problems like these make leaders and generals, not to mention you and me, search their souls to consult their deepest held beliefs. It's a philosophical question, how to choose between bad options. Now, Daniel Robinson is a professor of philosophy at Oxford University, and he's joining me now to explain how the great philosophers would have us approach this problem. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm fine. Of course, it's an awkward position to expect philosophy to answer a question once and for all. I mean, if we could answer questions once and for all, we would be out of business once we turn the answers in. If I'm to be a guide toward good decision-making, I fear that many will be not only frustrated at the end, but confirmed in their suspicion that philosophy's limits are nerve-wracking.
Well, we'll take that risk today and ask you where you might start when you're picking, say, a philosopher to start with. Which ones of those might we go to for moral decisions?
Well, the three classical ones. Kant, of course, was persuaded that what makes a decision a moral decision is that it adheres to a moral principle. And he expresses the principle in the form of what he calls a categorical imperative. It is an imperative. It says, do this. And it's categorical in that it is entirely indifferent to consequences. It's do this, come what may. And he gives us three forms of that imperative. One of them is quite common. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
The golden rule.
The golden rule. There's a different version of it in which he says, no man is ever to be used merely as a means to an end, but always as an end unto himself. You never use another rational being as if that being were merely an instrument of your purposes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The third version is the textbook version. It's act in such a way that the maxim of your action would, if you could make it so, be a universal law of nature. So on Kant,
I'm not sure I can live up to expectations like that.
Well, as one of my Oxford colleagues said many years ago, he said, you know, Dan, we all know the categorical imperative is right. It's just that nobody can live according to it. And that is one of the problems with Kantian theory. You can think of so many real-life situations in which a decision has to be guided by consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And so you move to another theory, in this case, one or another version of utilitarianism.
Okay, so forget Kant.
Let's hold him in reserve for
okay.
a moment, because we're going to have to bring him back if we let the utilitarians get away with too much.
Okay.
Utilitarianism has very good philosophical credentials. Jeremy Bentham is one of the modern-day advocates of it, John Stuart Mill. The argument goes like this. Bentham put it this way. He said, we are born under twin masters, pleasure and pain. And so moral decisions are decisions that can either increase or decrease the net suffering in the world. And what you're trying to optimize is pleasure. Not the vulgar,
not
merely,
hedonism.
Not hedonism, but the overall good that can be made to obtain. Now, put Kant next to Mill in a real-life situation. You've apprehended someone that's been charged with a vicious crime, a murder following a rape, etc.
Okay.
That person is in custody. A crowd has formed outside the jailhouse, and it wants vengeance. Meanwhile, the authorities have discovered that the person they apprehended actually is innocent of the crime. The crowd shouts out, turn this person over or we'll burn down the town. Do you turn over one you know to be innocent, where the alternative is the elimination of a town, a nation, the planet? Are we really to be so indifferent to consequences? Now, remember what the utilitarian is going to say here. The morally right course of action is the death of an innocent person, known to be innocent, because given the calculus, this is the only course of action that
saves
satisfies
the hides
it. Yeah.
of so many others.
And then the third...
Wait a second. So we've gone Kant, we've gone John Stuart Mill, which is the utilitarianism, and now...
And now we're going all the way ahead to the future to Aristotle, who died in 322 BC, and his ethical writings continue to inform moral philosophy. Sometimes Aristotle's position is described as perfectionism. It's a virtue-based theory of morality. understanding virtue to be the midpoint between extremes which are vices. The classic example is courage. At one extreme, the fear is so overwhelming as to be paralyzing, and this creates cowardice. At the other extreme, there's no fear at all, and this creates heedlessness. Mm-hmm. Courage is the midpoint, where one overcomes one's fear to do what ought to be done. And the other virtues are to be developed in the same way. And if you get it right, you've actually developed such a habit of virtue that Aristotle refers to it as a second nature. So the right decisions to be made now are the decisions that conduce to that kind of perfection. All right. Now we face Iraq.
Here's
the good news from philosophy. Mm-hmm. Every one of the major moral theories will give you a course of action to take with respect to war. Here's the bad news. Just about any reasonable position you want to take on the situation in Iraq will find support from each one of those theories. You said when you set this up, if we leave, many, many people will die. If we stay, many of our own soldiers will die.
And many innocent people.
Well, you might say that on a utilitarian calculus, let me put it crassly, over the long haul, you stay, oil is cheaper. It supports a certain kind of progress, which improves medical science, which saves millions of... You get the drift.
Yes.
You could also say, would you universalize your course of action here? If, in fact, you subscribe to a Kantian view, would you establish as a law of nature the same decision-making that was made in the process of entering this and carrying it on? At the same time, there is this Aristotelian summons. You ask yourself, is the principle that I'm about to act on, the principle that I would urge others to follow, something that is going to render them better persons, better in that fundamental sense of richer, fuller flourishing of just what it is that defines their very humanity? Philosophy, I'm sorry to say, is not a textbook of answers. It's a textbook of guides that tell you maybe you're asking the wrong question. Maybe the method you're using to address the question is a very good method, but not for questions of that kind. So it forces you to be perhaps a little more deliberative and to trust your passions less, your reasons more, and your limits most.
Daniel Robinson is a philosophy professor at Oxford University. Thank you so much for joining me
today. Thank you very much.
This is NPR News.